rolled the dice, and maybe they shortened their career by 4 years. That's about all that I think they perceive it as happening. You know, the poor schnooks who are holding the paper on the stocks, they're screwed. But again, these managers tend to be. You know, I would love to have someone just kind of take a good, strong look at a lot of the management types that crash their companies to see what kind of life they're living. I assume it's a rather nice one, unfortunately.
Chicken.
Yes.
W2LQ checking in. A great conversation.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you appreciate it. Ed, you want to say something?
You use the term crash their companies. Well, I admit and I'm fully that crashing a company for personal benefit is a horrible, horrible thing to do. It still is orders of magnitude different than another use of the word crash, like we're seeing with Boeing.
Okay, but unfortunately, sometimes the two are intertwined when it comes to aeronautics. You know, if you crash a pharmaceutical company, then you hide the fact that some research demonstrated that some product occasionally kills people. And, you know, that's not physically crashed. It's kind of just falling down and crumbling. But it's been known to happen. There are companies that we're all aware of who made billions of dollars of profit by basically addicting their clientele for opium products and such. And they made a practice of doing that, and they kept on doing that. And they're still trying to talk their way out of it. So, and again, none of these guys go into jail for a day. Not a day. It's just a matter of how many billions of dollars they got to squeeze out of them.
Saying none of these guys ever go to jail for even a day. What is your thought upon possibly adding criminal penalties and changing that?
You're basing it on what I've been still talking about for the last 20 minutes, I think white-collar crime has consequences and can destroy other people. You don't necessarily have to directly kill them, but if your actions and willfulness kills people or injures them significantly to ruin their lives, I think some time in the stir would be a useful thing. You know, if you're an executive and you look around and all the thieves and scoundrels that you've ever known are retired and spending their money happily, there's very little negative control to stop these new people doing the same damn thing. I think if their friend Chauncey was spending 10 years in jail, they might think a little bit longer. They still break the law, but I think jail is a deterrent. Losing 5% of your wealth, so much.
W2BZ. First of all, the 730 spin, 600, 700, 800, 900 were incredibly safe planes. It's when they got into the 737 MAX that things, excuse the pun, falling apart. There are only two airline companies out there. There's Airbus and Boeing. So the government, in a way, has to make sure that Boeing keeps on going, or else they'll give up all to a company in France, number one. Number two, about these guys not going to jail, nobody went to jail for the 2007-2008 financial crisis. Helmuth took down the entire world's financial system. Not one person went to jail. And they were doing such shady things as selling you insurance based on mortgages, and then betting against you on the other side of it, which you never knew about, with other derivatives. So that's how they were. And the United States had to bail out the financial system to the order of trillions, not billions, trillions with a T, and yet nobody went to jail. Not one person from any bank went to jail.
Okay, Ed and someone else doubled. So Ed first, and then the other person.
Nice and quick. I have heard, I am not an economist, I'm informed, but I have heard that most of the money that the government put out was repaid. It was treated as loans to be paid back when the companies got their act together. So the amount that the government paid, my understanding, is not zero, but it's a lot less than the numbers that have been tossed around. Again, this is what I've heard. I wasn't there.
Okay, I'd love to kind of look up the numbers on that. The other person who doubled with Ed, you want to say something?
Yeah, November 2, Charlie. You know, just to throw this in there, with people going to jail and white-collar crime, I mean, I don't know how many people are familiar with the Bayer Pharmaceutical catastrophe where they knew they were sitting on... quite a bit. I don't want to throw a $1 billion figure out there, but something was like that of tainted blood, HIV contaminated blood. And when the new screening procedures were passed, and they knew it, unquestionably, and they couldn't sell in the U.S., they exported it around the world. And nobody went to jail for that in the U.S. They did prosecute the Bayer representatives around the world, but nobody in the U.S. And it hit the New York Times and the news for one day, and you never heard of it again.
Yeah, thank you, John. I mean, there are endless stories that we tell each other. I hate when people bring out the old it's too big to fail excuse. My understanding, and I don't want to go into nitty-bitty gritty details of the Boeing Max, because we kind of touched on it multiple times, but my understanding was that there was a good way of bringing out the Maxes, which was to redesign the planes accordingly, and it was the cheap way, which is to just kind of strap bigger jets on them and hope everything stays together. Again, I'm being a little euphemistic, but generally, that's what the problem with the Max models are. And also that They made really stupid decisions that were foot-related with cost, like they didn't advise people of the modifications because that would require further more training, which would cost money. And so if you don't bother to tell people they got to be trained for it, you can save money and your profit margin goes up, and like we talked about before.
Roy, we're back to that. I can go on about that endlessly, but should I give you a short comment?
Sure. Like I said, I mean, we beat that dead horse repeatedly. I'm sort of surprised that there's not 25 books out there about it, but I guess people are writing their memoirs about the White House too much.
When Boeing decided to go to the 737 MAX 8, it involved using larger engines. Ever since the 1960s, when the 737 originally came out, the engines were getting fatter and fatter, but the basic structure of the plane and the landing gear had not changed. And they had just about run out of room, so they had to move the engines a little forward to get them up a little higher on the wing so they'd have more ground clearance, which caused some minor instability problems that required the MS, basically the autopilot system, did. And when it's running right, MCAS works beautifully. The plane can actually fly beautifully. Where everything went to hell in a handbasket is, this is after Boeing's, you know, upper management went completely insane. And they started making all these shortcuts. And a lot of the designs that affected the two, third world country crashes was because of, normally in aviation, everything is redundancy is life. Redundancy and backups are life. And they threw out the window. They basically threw out the main number one rule of aviation that dated practically back to the Wright brothers. Another one is they started combining some functions. And as I just said, they decided to keep it quiet so they don't have to train about it. Problem is, that's the problem came in. It's no accident that the crashes were not in the United States or Western Europe. Because pilots in the United States and Western Europe have to periodically train. And one of the things they absolutely have to do, and they are blindsided by this, is known as a trim runaway, which is basically the same end result that the MCAS problem can cause when a angle of attack sensor failed. And so, American, Western European, like a place like Japan, South Korea, these guys all train for this. So they said, oh, it's a trim runaway, and you figure out why later. Whereas in these third world countries, they don't have that level of training, and it blindsided them. They didn't know what to do. Have I rambled enough?
No, no, you were very strict. Again, the problem was Boeing did not alert anyone that needed proper training. They didn't explain MS to anyone. They didn't have the redundancies you mentioned, but at least they could have warned people to understand, you know, what to do in case of an emergency. All these people who were untrained on MCAS did the exact opposite of getting out of that mess, which made it worse. So again, it's management. It's ultimately, you know, some guy who's a minority isn't deciding on protocol of not training, not advising people who buy their planes to get the proper training on MCAS. You know, the poor guys tightening screws and such. They have nothing to do with this.
I don't think it has a job in that industry, just tightening screws.
Well, I'm, again, tongue-in-cheek. What can I tell you? If you don't laugh about some of this stuff, you'll cry.
Have you ever heard of the A&T, and I don't mean it on supermarket chain?
Probably, but it doesn't come to mind tonight.
Airframe and power plant license.
Okay. Care to expand?
Now, I don't know of guys who pass the doors on airlines, but definitely the guys who are working on the engines and the like. The FAA requires they have a license, and it's not an easy license. They have to work long and hard for this, called an A&P license. That basically makes you a licensed airplane mechanic. And if you don't have a license, generally, you can't touch an airplane. Although I think if you're putting the doors on an airline, it may not need that. But you know what I'm saying? If you're doing anything fancy, they have to be fully licensed, and the licenses have to be maintained. It's almost like being a pilot.
Oh, okay. But unfortunately, the nature of airplanes is you can be someone on the low end of the technical totem pole. You know, the guy doesn't even hang the doors. He just hangs a substitute door plug. And if he gets it wrong, he can kill people.
W2BZ, you know, if you hovered a drone above Kennedy Airport, you would see planes landing, sometimes two at a time, on the right and left runway, constantly throughout the day, and taking off constantly throughout the day. Now multiply that by a couple of 100,000 or more airports around the world that are landing and taking off planes constantly throughout the day, and it's a wonder we don't have more accidents. It really is a wonder we don't have more accidents. And the big problem with Boeing was that the United States government allowed Boeing to self-certify their own work. In other words, they double-checked their own work rather than having the FAA come in and check it. That was the downfall of Boeing, caused by the government not wanting to spend money having their own inspectors certify Boeing's work.
It's more complicated than that.
It's always more complicated than that, yeah. I mean, If the government did pull that with Boeing in the 70s, I don't think it would have had as severe an effect that it does in the 2020s. But, you know, we're going through this weird political cycle of people talking about deregulating things, and government shouldn't have any kind of interaction. But you need someone to look out for the small schnook wise, wealthy guys will get together and screw the poor schnooks. So, you know, everything's more complicated than we discuss here on the technical net. Science especially, you know, it's still a frame of reference for a starting off point of trying to understand why things are the way they are.
Can I have about a minute?
Sure, Ed.
There were multiple dimensions to it. The problems with the 737 MAX 8 are not like the problems we're seeing now. And yes, let me just throw a fence for a minute. Boeing has pulled off a miracle. Aviation business, everybody knows that the FAA comes down like a 10-pound sledgehammer on every little thing. And the FAA's, you know, troublemaking has been bane of the airline manufacturing business for decades. And Boeing was able to use clout with Congress, get the FAA to allow them to do the self-certifying. Now, in the same world, if any of us was in charge, we would go and we'd spray completely. All we have to do is pull it off on the MAX 8. And we would say, go away, we got this. And we'd leave with their tail between their legs. But instead, what they did is they acted like a batch of juvenile delinquents in the back rows of spitballs. And that was part of it. There's more to it than that. They threw out, like I said, the redundancy and backups. There is a blatant, obvious errors that were in the 737 MAX 8. Now, I heard about them, I was absolutely mortified. And these were fundamental level design errors that were implemented in software and did not require a single screw. It was the fact that the planes had two angle attack sections, and the classic way to do it in the 21st century is the computer compares both of them. If one of them is obviously bad, it uses the other one. And if it can't make up its mind, it defaults to doing something else that might be good enough. In this case, I think pitch would be a good factor. It might have an uncomfortable ride, it wouldn't work quite as well, but it wouldn't run away on you. And these errors never would have been found by, you know, lack of workmanship or inspections. This was at the basic, most basic design level. WB3.
Yeah, I mean, like anything, you're never, almost never going to find a single point. It's a perfect storm of all kinds of disastrous things. You know, most people didn't notice after the initial problem with MCAS that the excuse why they were taking them offline was because of the massive software problems they were experiencing. So you had that too. And I'm sure there's an interesting story behind that disaster as well as all the others. But, you know, the problem is you need police in the world. You or I will not break the law. It's just we're wired against it. There are a lot of guys who are wired, and there are a bunch of guys who, if no one is watching, what the hell? So you need police. You need regulation. You need watchdogs. You need all of that. They're annoying. They slow things down. They cost money. But unless you want to genetically re-engineer humanity, it's kind of, you're stuck with it.
LVQ.
Yes, LVQ.
What a wonderful conversation. I want to say that I've listened to Ed speak about airline stuff a few times before, and you can take what he says to the bank. I don't know as much as he does, but I know a few things. And it's besides, first off, Boeing will pay, just like Ed said, Boeing will pay eventually because people will decide, is that a Boeing plane? I don't want that. I'm going to fly the other type of aircraft, but not Boeing. If it's Boeing, I don't want to fly it. So now Boeing is now a bad word. And eventually they'll feel it. And whether or not they improve, I don't know. But it certainly is it's certainly going to give them impetus if people decide they don't want to fly their aircraft or buy their aircraft. And there certainly has been a lot of problems with that particular model. But what I wanted to say was, about single up on things. We come from a generation of people that took pride in what they did and loved what they did. And I don't know if we have that as much anymore as we used to. I come from an engineering background in hospitals. I worked in two of New York City's biggest hospitals. And I've seen it happen. I've seen as people left and new people came up, the old people that left had so much knowledge that was never passed down. People come up, they didn't have the knowledge, they would try and do the best they could, but they did not only didn't have knowledge, they didn't have the impetus. Let me let it drop. And I see it every day. I was at the grocery store the other day, and this young cashier, this older guy, gave $100 to cash for him, and he gave him back. He had spent $8, and he asked him for change for $100, and he gave him back $2 in change. And the guy said, "Well, where's my other $80?" And the kid did not understand. And he was very nice, very polite. And even his boss tried to explain it to him. And it took like three or four people to explain it to him before he got it. So I think it's not just people not doing what they want to do. I think that our level of intelligence that we had in the last generation has been lost. And I might get browbeaten for that, but I feel that's part of this. Let me turn it back to you. W2LVQ.
This is almost a statement, so may I have a comment?
Sure, Ed. And I have a comment as well, but I'll do it after you, Ed.
There have always been mutants. There will always be mutants. Questions are the ratio of idiots to everybody else going up or going down, and what are we doing about it? And another question is, are the companies doing enough mentoring and screening of the newbies? I heard two great conversations where in both cases, one about the one with the people in the hospitals, the other about the supermarkets, it used to be that new people were trained, and especially it used to be if the old grizzled guy says, "I'm retiring," they said, "Fine, but okay, if we bring in your replacement, you train him before you go," and they agree upon the time and all that. That seems to have gone out the window, and we've suffered terribly for that.
Okay, AC2GS, by the way. There are documents of people despairing that the next generation is screw things up to go back to Athens in ancient Greece. So this is a never-ending concept that kids today, you know, what are you going to do with them? To quote from Bye Bye Birdie. As Ed said, there's always been idiots. You see them on television every day, unfortunately. There always will be idiots. There are incompetent people. There are competent people. Usually, competent people tend to rise up to a higher employment position than a supermarket. So, unfortunately, I think people running supermarkets have a problem now. I used to have an endless discussion in the middle of the night with Wesley and John about United States education system, which I think is terrible, unfortunately. We spend a lot of money. Sometimes we don't spend that much money, but we generally spend a lot of money. And for some odd reason, we don't seem to get it right. Even when I was a kid, somehow I was taught short division before I was taught long division. Go figure that out. I think we have a problem with education, and everyone kind of points to Ed, is that you?
No, but it might as well have been.
Okay, let me just kind of finish up my little spiel, if you will. It's just that education is kind of erratic. I'm sure some people get very good educations and some people get terrible educations. Some people are inherently rather intelligent and they seek out knowledge and seek out mentorship and assistance and such, and others don't care. There's a lot of apathy out there. There's a lot of the Chinese actually have a term for it. It's kind of you do the smallest amount that you can get away with. So the kind of is sort of a reasonable quality control in China is not terribly good, but Americans sometimes suffer it too. I I talk to people and they kind of say, well, why are you doing all this? Why are you spending your time doing this? Do less, because you can get away with a lot less than you're doing. And Ed has pride in what he does. I have pride in what he does. I'm sure Ron has pride in what he does. You know, most of the people that I'm singing to the choir. But there's a lot of guys out there who just want to get by. They want to make it to tomorrow.
We're still using the imperial system of measurement that speaks volumes in itself.
Ed, did you want to say something?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me address the most recent thing. Anybody who's really sharp, both imperial and metric interchangeably, when you go below a millimeter, you change the thousandths of an inch. Everybody does that all over the world. So the idea being, those in the know, those who have chosen to be educated, just go seamlessly back and forth from one to the other. Back to the original subject. I will tell you the secret life. I'm that serious, by the way. I am really serious. It's very, very simple. It is one question. So what did you do in school today? That makes all the difference in the world. When the parents want their kids to get a good education, somehow they manage to get it. If the parents don't care, sometimes they do, but more often don't. It's that simple. Yes, education in this country is a mixed bag. I and my children, through some luck and some hard work, have gone to decent schools. None of us have gone to the absolute top tier school. I don't think we've missed anything for it, but we've gone to certainly schools, and we've all done very well at them. Not all schools are at this level, particularly at the lower grades, particularly in poorer neighborhoods. But if you say to your kid, what happened in school today, and you go and talk to the teachers about what happened today, and your kids are in with it, even the worst schools, the teachers are looking for somebody who really wants to learn, and they will do whatever they can to help.
Okay, I mean, for the most part, hopefully you're quite correct. I've had some teachers who were very pleasant human beings, but I wouldn't give them to teach about anything. I had a very nice woman in fourth grade who taught me the nuances of skate mechanisms. And, you know, how if you kind of move your heel in the right way, you pop the attachments. Now, why I was learning that instead of long division, I'm not quite sure, but that's what I got then. And my parents didn't know. I didn't know enough to know that something weird was going on, and so they didn't know something weird was going on. My grades were reasonably well. I didn't complain about anything, and they thought that they were doing a nice job. You know, so it's always good when parents get involved in their children's education. Again, it depends upon if the parents are insane. There are some cases where the parents are very interested in their children's education, but they're raving lunatics, and so they want people to be taught about Noah's Ark and explain, you know, how big it was to fill up with all two of all kinds and such. And if you kind of smirked when you said that, then they want you fired because obviously you're a godless sad or something. So, you know, like everything else, this too is even more complicated than we're discussing it.
Remember, it is very important that you choose your parents carefully.
Yes, that's always very good, although I have known some fine people who had dubious childhood, and they attained some fascinating things. Just as an aside, I read a autobiography of the guy who produced Babylon 5. He was a TV writer, producer. His family came from hell. Every possible terrible thing, including throwing him off a roof, happened to this poor guy, and yet he has found success as an adult.
The adversity If it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. That's not given as an excuse, aside from it.
Yes, sometimes as a means of almost perversion, you know, you're going to show them by being sane as opposed to all of them. So, I mean, it's probably a lot easier to do it the old-fashioned way and have sane parents who care about you and love you and protect you and want to see you be better than them. We went through pre-World II, post-World War II. Parents were much more focused on their children having better lives than themselves. They would work as hard as they could to give to their children so that their children wouldn't have the problems they had growing up. I think the present generation grew up in different environments, and so they have kind of different angles to look at. But ultimately, I think parents fundamentally want the best for their children. Because if I didn't think that, I'd probably go a little wacky.
Oh, one more comment.
Certainly, Ed.
I've made bones about this. I'm active Boy Scouts, and I'll deal with the little ones. As a matter of fact, yesterday, I was out in Wading River surrounded by hundreds of kids between the ages of 6 and 10. I'll deal with it. But what I really want to do is work with the high school kids, and I have found they run gamut. Some of them, they get out of the Boy Scouts today, you know, roughly when they graduate high school. They are fine, fine people. Some of them are just cruising for a cruising, loading through life in the fog. But there are a good number of them who I really feel confident will do very well.
Wow, that's good to hear, Ed. Yeah, again, there's a, I hate to use the term bell curve, but there's a bell curve of people's behaviors. There are young people. You know, the idea that anyone under 30 is an idiot is a kind of limited perspective on the reality as I see it. You'll find young people who are idiots. You'll find middle-aged people who are idiots. You'll find elderly people who are idiots. Idiots are all over the place. I've heard them on too many frequencies. But they're also very clever people, smart, who have ethics and morals and a sense of history and such. And it's a pleasure to take some time on Sunday nights to talk to them. So there are good people out there, and there are goofy people out there. And I advise everyone to seek out the good guys and let the goofy guys play pinochle in the corner someplace.
Tom and Holmes.
Okay, I think we burnt this interesting subject. It veered in interesting places, Rich. Once again, you plant a seed and a big tree kind of twists and turns and goes in all kinds of directions. Yes. Anyway, I guess everyone figured out. Let's give it a try. Wes, you want to discuss very low frequency transmissions?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah, I hope it continues this way.
Okay, I see the carrier. Tesla has recalled 5,750 vehicles. They create a danger, acceleration, hazard. The pedal is popping out. Did you hear about it?
Yeah, it's at the very top. Roy's links for tonight. Tesla recalls all Cybertrucks over accelerator pedal defect. The pedal is a two-part device, apparently, that falls, separates, and lodges itself down permanently in the on position. People have to, before they free the accelerator pedal, they have to hit the brake that shuts down the accelerator, and it's a mess. So I think all of the Cybertrucks have been recalled. Now, this is the same truck that you have to use a special car wash mode. If you drive through a car wash without setting your Cybertruck for car wash, you void your warranty. So you have this all-terrain tank that's supposed to be bulletproof, and it can't survive a car wash.
So by that, the prices for all models of Tesla dropped down for $2,000, and Model Y costs right now $29,490.
Yeah, and out there with Tesla stock, I would suggest finding a better investment. I don't think it's going up anytime too soon. They discontinued work on engineering a inexpensive electric vehicle because the Chinese are getting ready to flood the market and they couldn't compete. Their semis still don't exist. Roadster doesn't exist. Just about any new model doesn't exist. And the Cybertruck is recalled. So this is not a healthy business model at this point.
LVQ.
Yes, Ron.
Yeah, I didn't hear that about the truck, but when I saw that demo about the windows can't be broken with a hammer, and they broke the window, I said, nah, there's problems with this truck. But wow. You can't take it through a car wash. I'm flabbergasted. Unbelievable. And as far as the Chinese flooding the market, they can flood the market all they want. I don't think anybody's going to buy them, no matter how cheap they are. And if they do buy them, they're going to find out there's not enough electricity to charge them. So it's going to be very interesting. I don't know how long I'm going to be sticking around, but I think I'm going to see some interesting things happening with Chinese flooding the market with electric vehicles. Of course, they have acres and acres of electric vehicles in China that they can't sell. They only made them so that they could say they're the biggest producer of electric vehicles in the world. But they don't sell them. They just sit. It's like kind of like their bicycle issue, if you remember that. Anyway, back to that.
Isn't that they sold 5,000 vehicles, Cybertruck, so they recall them all?
Yeah, that's my understanding, Wesley, because for some odd reason, their accelerator pedal is a two-part thing that comes loose and then the lower part lodge on the face board. And so it's like getting your accelerator stuck. Just to comment, Ron, I sort of agree with you, but the problem is that the Chinese subsidize everything. So they subsidize the manufacturers of the electric vehicles in China that are sitting in parking lots rusting away or exploding occasionally. And even though it's probably dangerous to drive them, I am sure that if they get some kind of approval in some state of the union, China will charge, $5,000 for a decked-out electric vehicle, even though it's a death trap. There's going to be guys out there who say, what the hell?
China was trying to get to the Mexican market with the manufacturing, but it looks like the U.S. ruling is not happy with that. Do you have any knowledge?
No, I don't. You were doubling. I think it was doubling. It could have been interference. So if anyone was trying to talk when Wesley was talking, I'll give you a little chance here.
I'm sorry, Wesley. It's W12VQ. I was just saying that I agree with you, Roy, and I'm fastening my seatbelt, just getting ready to watch what happens, because people will buy anything.
It's absolutely true. Sorry about the double. Back to that.
No problem. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, they kind of did it already with those little electric bikes where people take it indoors to recharge them and they blow up. And then the fire department has to deal with a lithium fire, which is different than most of the other fires that they do. So, I think unfortunately or fortunately, electric vehicles have kind of peaked in the interest. They've saturated the guys who like new shiny things. And what's left behind is a large group of guys who might tolerate hybrid, but don't really want to go searching for a charging station all over the place. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Getting back to China, I'm not aware of any kind of trade shenanigans, but, you know, I'm sure the Chinese are very upset that they're no longer the number one trading partner with the United States, despite the fact of all that they've done to kind of screw us around. They still want our money. So I'm not familiar with this particular aspect of Chinese-Mexican diplomacy.
Okay. The next one, Euroflot Underwater Telescope reviews what is really going on the sea and the universe. And that is I had the name of it. Just lost it. Okay, Ismar. IDMIR. So, wonder, what is the scope doing 3,500 feet beneath the sea level? Back to you.
Well, I don't have the faintest idea. It's non-conducive to astronomy because moving water is worse than moving air currents. So you have a lot of distortion. So the amount of computational corrections would strike me to be incredible. I guess theoretically you could use it to visualize distant objects in the ocean. But again, you have the problem that the oceans can be rather dirty. So, there's dust and there's algae and there's all kinds of fun stuff that probably gets in the way. So I'll be curious to see exactly what they if anything.
Okay, Ismar is located 3,500 meters. It's 3.5 kilometers. It provides with information of geophysical analogy, biology, and all above shows how the universe is made, and it was explained by scientific coordinator of IDMAR.
Okay, well, I would assume they're getting paid by IDMAR, so they got to promote the value. Again, not quite sure how sticking a telescope in the ocean is going to be how the universe is working. Maybe it'll tell you how the fish next door is working, but, that's not my idea of the universe, personally.
Yeah, the initial idea was the neutrino astronomy beyond the solar system rested on the two arguments. That means astronomers thought that supernova collapse in our galaxy, the Milky Way, would be accompanied by bursts of high energetic neutrinos.
Well, I mean, personally, I wouldn't call those things telescopes. Then they're basically sensors. They're particle detectors. Yeah, I guess if you want to bend the English language, you can say that a light scope is just a photon particle detector. But still, that kind of strikes me as just there are a lot of things that are buried in underground that are used to detect objects that don't interact much, especially neutrinos. We have billions and billions of neutrinos passing by through our bodies as I speak and you listen. Neutrinos travel right through the Earth and go on their merry way. Putting things underground or in the water doesn't really disturb the chances of detecting them. So, I don't know. I'm not quite sure if it's really what I would think of as a telescope. I would consider it, again, more of a particle detector.
Yeah, okay. It was suggested to construct a large Cherenkov counter where the chunk of light is the light that extraterrestrial particles release when they penetrate into the Earth atmosphere. But actually, chunk of radiation is the fine bluish light around the radioactive preparation in the water during experiments. So, but it's luminescence of uranium salt solutions excited by gamma rays instead of less energetic light. Yeah. Why is it called telescope?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I pulled up a page that says Europe's largest submarine telescope. Again, you know, if you want to really hedge the English language, you can kind of say that, you know, if what it's looking for is Cherenkov, and I excuse my complete mispronunciation, radiation, then you could say, well, it's arrays or electromagnetic waves, and so telescopes operate on visible light and ultraviolet and infrared and radio waves even. So why not gamma rays? So I don't know. Again, I kind of think of these things, but they're usually presented in scientific presentations as particle sensors. You know, when they have that big vat of I think heavy water that they buried someplace, and with a bunch of detectors to detect neutrino emissions and such, that's the way I recall them describing it. I doubt that these things have lenses and tubes. They probably just have containers and small particle detectors and other things. Haven't been able to find a picture of it yet.
Okay. I started to explain WSPR, so the modern form of it is a group of guys is one month beneath the ground level somewhere in the cave or mine. And the weak signal propagation reporter, which is the device name, but there are many other names of it. At frequency 85 kilohertz, is sending signals of distress or whatever the signals are, the communication. That signal is picked up by... It's a good antenna for ham radio amateurs. Hold on. Okay. So you have PECs, the tent PECs. Like you, a tent, and you have the PECs. And you have a distance between the PEC about 30 feet. On each side, so, and in the middle you have a meter, so it's a receiver, and that receiver is receiving a frequency 85 kilohertz, re-changing that frequency transverter into 1.6 megahertz or 3.5 megahertz, and the rig can receive it at your home at power of 100 watts. How do you like it?
Okay, you're talking about basically a transverter. I have transverters for higher frequencies. It will receive and transmit on 40 centimeters, but it uses a radio on the 10-meter band to transvert it up and down. So you can do it in the opposite direction as well. It's still not terribly efficient, would be my guess.
Shitting the board.
B2BXO with some comments.
Certainly, Frank.
Yeah, I'm surprised I got a break to get in there. I'm thinking, talk about the very cheap electric cars. Kind of reminds me of the $5 Chinese-made HTs. I forget the brand. Somebody will buy it, I'm sure. That flooded the ham radio market, at least for a while. I'm not sure whether they're still out there or not. And if I remember correctly, the secret to those was that most of them didn't work, so you bought a bunch of them and used the one that worked. Yeah, and as far as talking about Noah's Ark, I've always kind of thought that Noah's Ark was sort of like Doctor Who's spacecraft, which I think is called the TARDIS. I'm not a big fan of the show. which is said to be bigger on the inside than on the outside. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, that would fix some things, although the Bible actually measures it in cubits. You have a lot of other problems. You need to have a great ventilation system, because the defecation and the methane is going to suffocate pretty much everyone on board who's not by a window. Thermal regulation, air, food supply. Where do you keep the food? Elon Musk would probably be very interested in this because he tends to have thousands of people every 2 years ship off to Mars. And I don't think he has a clue where the food's going to come from. So if I was him, I would get some Bible scholars out there to figure it out.
LVQ.
Yes, Ron.
I thought the miracle of the ark was that the animals didn't defecate and they all went to sleep. And some very interesting questions about the ark. Although they built one out west someplace or out, you got what state it's in. They actually built what they think is a replica of the ark. And I guess they have some answer to all of those questions. But I don't know. We believe anything anybody tells us. I think it's important to have religion, but my goodness, it's just amazing what people can tell us, and we'll say, okay, that.
AC2GS. Well, a couple of things. It wasn't west. It's always south. You know, whenever you're talking about stuff like that, it's invariably someplace like Alabama or Tennessee. It's all out. And I understand that they tried to build one, but then they had to kind of retrofit ventilation shafts and all kinds of things into it. So, and it wasn't self-supporting, so I think they needed to use steel structures. It sort of depends. And also the problem is that if you really read Genesis and the tale of Noah's Ark, there are two versions of it merged together. In one part of Noah's story, it was two of each kind. In other parts, it was, I think, five of each kind. So we're not even quite sure how many of each kind. And then the best solution that I've heard is the term of a kind. So that instead of having all the insects that are around, it just had two sets of insects of a kind, and they kind of bifurcated in really rapid evolution right after they got off the ark. So that's probably the best solution for them. But the point is, a lot of things are metaphors. They're a story to convey a bigger concept. And unfortunately, everyone has lost their mind and thinks metaphors are real.
Just quickly, if I may.
Certainly.
You're absolutely correct. And, of course, the Ark story goes way back. It's many, many ancient cultures way before had the Ark story. So I think it's to remind us that something happened during the Younger Dryas. Well, before that, and a lot of ice melted real fast, and we had a lot of water where we didn't have water before. Back to that.
I would like to come back to lunch because we have a few minutes left.
Okay. I'll give it to you in 1 second. I just want to respond to Ron. It's possible. You never kind of know how it begins. There are flood stories that go back to the first civilization. There's always an argument whether it was the Egyptians or whether it was the Mesopotamians. Mesopotamia is Greek for between the two rivers. So the whole point of Mesopotamia is the rivers would flood and silt would deposit and it would be for ground. They could build farms and produce a lot of wealth that way. So it's very likely that they suffered very severe floods and wrote them down tablets, and because they were one of the major empires at the time, their story got passed all over the place, and that's probably how Noah evolved. But we'll never know.
The parting of the seas by Moses. Care to delve into that?
controversial subject.
Anyway, Wes, you want to go on with your subject?
Yes, I do. We have a few minutes left, so I would like to use it for the talking question. So, at low, very low frequencies, when ham radio amateurs decided to build the device that is able to use ERF on antenna, I could use it this way because there is this old system of an antenna that is, didn't have the time to explain how it works. But anyhow, there isn't a technique that is geolocation for the cave surveying. Instead of using a frequency of 86 kilohertz, they use 1 to 3 kilohertz, typically powers 10 watts, and at low frequencies, there is virtually no electromagnetic radiation. The power is dissipated as a heat in the antenna. So let's say the magnetic field induces the signal in the receiver antenna, which is usually similar to, in the construction, to the transmitter. If the receiver loop is oriented in such a way that there is no magnetic lines pass through, then it will not detect the signal. So establishing this neural orientation at several locations allows the operator to triangulate the ground zero point directly above the underground transmitter, and at which location the field lines are vertical. So this was the method developed by ham radio amateurs to find people lost in caves or missing in caves or in danger in caves. Okay, now there is a number of devices, so for, they work from 300 hertz up to kilohertz, but some of them were tried in 300 kilohertz. So in between we have 136 kilohertz ham band that is used. I don't know how that was regulated with the FCC, but it was mostly by English gentlemen, so FCC had nothing to do with that, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so at 50 kilohertz and 80 kilohertz, there was the most successful communication, and in 1987, the group of radio amateurs in caves of Holt Cave Research Association decided to build the device, and later on, there was 1,000 devices this built by ham radio amateurs and gave to the cave rescue organization in order to help to find the people. And there was a few years ago a group of students that went in where it was Filipinas, and that radio was also helping it. No, that was in India or Filipinas. I forgot, Dr. Ray.
Yeah, it's in the Philippines. That was the infamous event, good old Elon called the guy who got them out a pedophile. And, the guy sued him, and because Elon had very, very good ears, he got away with that. I think his comment was that just a general insult in South Africa.
Yeah, but going back to the very beginning, Alexander Kedrick, 16 years old, won the 2009 International Science Fair for inventing the cave texting device. So that was the beginning for the texting instead of talking. So he got from Los Alamos a new computer and trip to Switzerland for $12,000.
Yeah, that was very, very nice of them. You know, a lot of times, unfortunately, people don't get what they deserve. The scientist who discovered blue LEDs, I think it made Nichia Labs millions of dollars, and I think they gave him some kind of a $3,000 reward for it.
Yeah, so the very beginning, before that beginning, there was the guide wire radio and the walkie-talkie ATB radio frequencies. They'd use magnetic induction, or magnetic induction equipment was used by itself, usually necessary for communication through the rack itself. The technique of ERP current. I'm trying to find out earth current injection. I didn't find it yet. The earth current injection was the one that was used before that sophisticated.